Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. It's, what is it, the 5th of November.
Yep. And you are good. You reset your clocks just right. Did you have any problems? Did you have like some of those ovens or old non-automatic clocks that were updating that you need to update?
Not really.
I had to do the air conditioning unit in the office and I had to kind of figure that out. I had to do the clocks on the ovens and that was about it. Fortunately. Huh. Because that could be, you know, especially those car clocks.
My oven doesn't have a clock.
No? Oh. Well, I have two ovens that are next to each other, so they're always just a little bit off. Because you can't get to one to the other without, you know, fast enough, remembering how to set it in order to get it done. Anyway, let's talk about what we have going on here. We got markets plowing ahead. Reaching all-time highs, Dow Jones Industrial Average reached a new all-time high. Finally, it was the laggard in the group. We had a surprise unemployment or a surprise employment report last week to the upside. Fed, we'll talk about an update on the recent rate decision. This is the last big week for earnings for the S&P 500. I think 85 companies are reporting this week. We have the answer to last week's brain teaser and a new one. And a quick weekend update. Did you do anything special this weekend?
Not that I can think of. No. My wife had her birthday, so we had a birthday party.
Oh, very nice. Happy birthday. I had a birthday party, too, at my house for my wife's birthday.
What day is that?
I was partying on Friday night.
Oh, sure. Her birthday's on Friday night?
No, her birthday's on the 16th. Don't even ask.
Oh, you're not even close.
Don't even ask. That's just one of several parties that we're having.
A month of parties.
Yeah.
How old is she?
She ain't 50 anymore. Let's put it that way. the thought of being married to a woman at 60 years old when I'm only like 22, you know, it's crazy.
Sounds like it.
So what I did was I did a 6-hour smoked ribs, 7-hour smoked beef short ribs. I did a traditional shrimp boil. And then we had, after dinner, we had crazy karaoke in the tiki. I have all this podcasting equipment, right, that I converted to make it work for karaoke. I just had to rent a powered speaker and I was fine.
You're talking about using the Rodecaster or whatever it's called?
I used my older one. I used my Presonus Studio Live Air 8.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would work.
Yeah, I used that one. The Presonus would work too because it has analog outputs. But I used that. I got a powered speaker, two microphones, and I got this really cool online karaoke program.
You have neighbors?
Yeah, they were. I got texts. They weren't sure whether they should call the cops or call in singing lessons. That was the text I got.
Let's invite them over.
They're coming over on the 16th, and we're doing karaoke again.
Oh, brother!
Yeah, it's ugly. It's ugly. Especially because some of the people on Friday night don't drink so much, and karaoke is not that good without any liquid lubrication, you know.
Oh yeah, you can't drink unless you're plastered.
Yeah, so that was my weekend.
I'm sorry, I said you can't sing unless you're plastered.
Ah, we understood you. Yeah. All right, we have a quick market update. We'll get on to some of the things we're talking about this evening. We have FOMO and MOMO colliding. So we have the momentum trade that's been kind of driving things up regardless of any outside influence. Markets just continue higher. And now we got the fear of missing out coming in where people are like, oh, crap, I was on the sideline. I thought things were going to crash. I didn't want to put my money to work. And, I got to do it now. So we got this kind of collision.
Jump in at that peak.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Well, if that's going on, then you know we're going to have a nice little correction here. Maybe some of these shorts will start to pay off.
Yeah. Possibly. There's a couple of interesting things that are happening, which we're going to go through. I'm going to show you some, I think I have this. Oh, yeah, I have this. Some technical analysis that is pointing to some pretty, I would say, overbought conditions. And they're all
You really need technical analysis to know that it's overbought?
No, I can just stand back and look a little bit, and I'm like, yeah, that's a little overbought. But the we had some promising news on the trade war front, and we'll talk about where that went as well, and some of these technicals. But so let's get into the technicals. Let's talk about what's going on. We could look at things like fear and greed indices that are flashing an 86 out of 100, which is pretty high. We could look at the key reversal indicator, which is not as high. It's a 2 to a 3. But there's a chart that I put on. This is on episode show notes for episode number 479. Yeah. Take a look at this. This is now, this chart is very simple. What it shows is Bollinger Band, which is just standard deviations above or below a moving average. That's all Bollinger Bands do.
Right. Well, they also, when they come close together, right, then there's a breakout one way or the other.
Right. They can get a squeeze play or they get too wide. Right. So what we have here is the S&P 500 and the 50-day. Oftentimes, the 20-day moving average is used for the Bollinger Bands. But this one, I use the 50-day moving average just to see where we are. And I went back and I want to give you some time. So that's why some of the candles are a little bit smaller. But you'll notice that we were riding back to the left in April, right along that top line, two standard deviations above the 50-day moving average. And it kind of got to the point, it just couldn't get above it, and then collapsed down to two standard deviations below.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Then we see it get again towards the top, and then it doesn't go anywhere, and it rolls down.
It's actually a pretty good-looking – it looks – like things are normal.
Yeah, this is a normal situation. We are now above two standard deviations higher than the 50-day moving average.
It should come down a little bit.
So that's something. The second thing is,
there's an incidence there in July where it keeps bumping at the top, bumpity, bumpity, bump, bump.
Right, but it rarely goes over, but we are definitely over at this point. Then yes, there's the RSI. True. RSI is just an indicator of overbought, oversold using a variety.
Relative strength index.
Yes. And there's a couple different ways to look at this, but basically 30 is considered, quote, oversold, and 70 is considered overbought. And you hear a lot of the guys on CNBC always talking about RSI. Oh, the RSI is oversold.
I've never liked RSI.
I don't like it either, to be honest with you, as a standalone. But when I start combining it with, and I can put many more of these indicators on here, when I start looking at the NASDAQ, the Dow Jones, and the S&P together, and they all look exactly the same, where we're seeing an RSI hitting close to 70, we're seeing two standard deviations above the 50-day moving average. We're seeing that, put call ratios are really low. The VIX is at 13. All these different things that are coming together to show you that there's some complacency in the markets and almost a buy at any cost going on. Forget about valuations. Forget about the fact that there is a trade war going on. You know, so something to consider.
Well, it doesn't look horrible, but I can see a correction coming.
Yeah, the NASDAQ's a little bit more overheated. And we had some good market moves due to the fact that, again, we saw some decent reports on trade, that things were moving along well, maybe even ahead of schedule, and everybody's happy-pappy. And China comes out with some good discussion over the weekend, so that made everybody even happier. Then we had the employment report last week where we saw 128,000 new jobs added to the payrolls. Now, that's usually not a big number that would be considered
that's
a low.
That's a number under the number.
But there was one big issue going on where we had the GM strike, and that pulled 50,000 workers off of the payrolls.
Right. Well, that would have made it a plus then. I always use 150,000 as the baseline.
Right. So you'd be at 175.
Yeah, that would be good.
75,000 was the expectation number. So when this number came out, there was a lot of confusion. Like, wait a minute, what's going on? We thought that last month was light. This month we pulled out. We should have pulled out the 50,000 for the GM. And here we are with a 128,000 plus. And the last 2 months were revised upwards. So what this is telling me is that, and this is why the unemployment number is so important. If you go on a scale and look at all the different economic indicators in terms of highest to lowest of importance, this ranks as one of the highest because it tells you that companies are willing to add employees to their payrolls. And when they do so, they're not doing it for like a day. They have to think further out. And if they have a good feeling and they have confidence about their business moving forward, they're willing to put on employees. So this gives you a good feeling that there is, you know, the environment that they're living in is good enough that they have confidence to add employees, which essentially adds expense, right?
Yes, and I will take a look at the shadow stats, which we haven't looked at for months and months.
Yeah, what does it say? I didn't even look at it.
Well, it tells me that since the middle of 2017, the unemployment has been going down.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a bogus. I mean, it's less of a bogus number than it was, but it's actually moving down.
Less of a bogus number. I like it.
It's less of a bogus number.
So what are they saying? Where's it at?
Well, it looks like we're at about 21%.
Oh, 21 from where?
It was as high as, I'd say about 24.
Hmm. So
23.
It's moving in the same general direction.
Yeah, it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, unemployment ticked up a little bit, I think, to 3.6%, if my memory is correct. But the other thing that happens is why the markets like a solid number and continuation of payrolls is because it adds money into the economy. It adds money into the markets. People that start on payrolls and have jobs are going to do their 401ks and put money into the market. So that automatically pumps up markets. Maybe not, you know, to a great amount, but the more people that are on the payrolls, the more the automatic money going into the market on a regular basis through 401k automatic deductions from your paychecks is going to help with liquidity in the markets to a degree.
I think probably more than just a degree.
Yeah, so you have that going on too, and there is all this kind of good things happening where you have companies thinking that, hey, nothing's falling apart, things are good, we're confident, we're adding. So that's why the employment number is so important. So markets rallied on that, rallied pretty nicely on that. And on the heels of Wednesday's Fed rate cut, they cut rates again by 0.25%. Now the rate is 1.5 to 1.75 Fed funds rate. However, they seem to be promoting and floating the idea that this is going to be the last cut for a while. Because
let's hope so.
Yeah. It is getting a little bit crazy with all the decent amount of economic activity in the U.S. And then at the same time, we have the Fed actively pursuing a rate cut strategy. Something seems wrong about that, doesn't it?
Totally.
So the idea, they changed like two words in the equation. And that was the way of them promoting subtly that they're going to wait for any significant data to change in order to change their current stance. So more so than just saying, okay, we're going to be data dependent, they really pressed it pretty hard by saying we'd have to see a very significant change to, you know, like a real slow down the economy.
Interesting.
Yep. And with that in mind, we saw that the manufacturing number, the ISM manufacturing number on Friday came out again in the 48 level, which is severe contraction. But the ISM services number that we got today came in at 54 and change, which is a little bit better than last month and a little bit better than expected. There's a chart there for that too. So you can see that the manufacturing clearly is in a recession. There's no question about this. I don't think anybody out there would disagree that the manufacturing sector of our economy is in a recession.
Yes, it has to be.
Right. And the services, which is about 70% of our economy, is still doing okay, kind of on a slowdown path since mid-2018, where it was as high as 62, now coming into about 54.6 is where it landed today.
Yeah,
and again, that was a little uptick, a little bit better than last month. So that's good. I mean, I think that, again, shows that the economy is, well, not only the economy, but consumers are, you know, doing well. Now, give us the man on the street here. I heard on No Agenda something about, you were talking about the trains again.
No, I was mostly talking about the number of cars that the Zephyr is carrying around, which is only 8, as opposed to 10 at their peak during the summer. But the number of boxcars are not boxcars, but the carrier cars that are out there, I can't tell you because I can't see. It's dark out. So I can't say that there's a lot. I know a lot of them were pulled out the other day because when they decide to move a bunch of them, they slam a switch engine into the back and it shakes the whole city.
Really?
Oh, it makes a huge, it sounds like an earthquake.
And they only run at night?
No, I'm just saying I can't see anything because it's night. When they pulled a bunch of them away, that was at night. But generally speaking, it's just about any time they want to.
Whatever the schedule
is. I got no report. I really had a zero report on the Zephyr.
Okay.
I got on the Zephyr, but the Zephyr's, you know, just a money-losing passenger train.
What, is that a requirement for every state to have one of those?
I don't think every state has one. I don't think New Mexico has a money-losing passenger train.
I mean, we have one. Well, Amtrak's a money-losing passenger train.
Well, you guys also got suckered into some stupid high-speed rail scam.
That's terrible. Billions of dollars spent. You get there, and as the train is passing, you look, and you're like, I don't think I see anybody on the train. Are they just sitting low? There's like 4 people on this whole train.
Well, they run these trains, even when in the off season, do have a lot of people on. They're not full, but they're, I think, about 50% capacity usually, something along those lines. Mm. And they run a train from Sacramento to San Francisco through a bunch of little suburb towns like Martinez and Davis and places like that. That is actually a commuter train that goes for people that work in the San Francisco Bay Area. They run this train. The Capital Corridor, and they run probably about 10 of them a day going each way.
And they're losing money on it.
They're losing money on everything. Yeah, they are. But they're serving some people.
Well, some people are happy.
You know, the funny thing is I said, well, this is maybe the thing to do. You get near the train station in Davis, the Amtrak, and you live and work in San Francisco, so you can buy a cheap house up there. And then you can, you know, live the life of Riley in a nice, big, cheap house. And then you can work in the city where all these people are spending too much money for the real estate. You look into it, the houses aren't cheap.
Oh, no?
No, you'd think.
Is that because it's near a train?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, that's a natural thing. You know, once you get transportation and accessibility, housing prices go up. I mean, that's natural. So there's an update on the skinny partial phase one deal. Now, all of a sudden today, after the good news we had over the weekend, China is now demanding that all tariffs be removed before agreeing to any deal, according to the Nikkei, which is a newspaper report, news service.
So what are they up to?
Well, it's very clear to me. They don't want to do a deal.
Well, that's yes.
And they know that the longer they wait, the more backed into a corner we're going to be to get something done, because we're already agreeing to a deal that's BS, full of nothingness. They've also said there's no way they think they can get to that $50 billion worth of agricultural purchases over a 2-year period, maybe 20.
Well, they also believe that Trump's not going to get reelected, according to their experts. And that's what they're waiting for.
That's what they're waiting for, because they believe that the next administration will be, well, a lot weaker in terms of this. But I think we flinched with the phase one deal, saying that we were going to get this done, because that removes a lot of leverage. If we took off tariffs already, or we took off the increase of tariffs that was supposed to be going into effect on October 15th in advance of this. So already we blinked. So, yes, we could put it back on. And we have the December 15th increase coming. But I just don't understand how these guys are playing this. It's all dangling carrots for the markets. I get that. And trying to give all these great reports to make everything look great. I get that. But in the end of the day, China, you know, agrees to something, then they don't agree to something. And then we agree to something, we don't agree to something. And then we're like, okay, let's just get something done that's easy to do. And they're like, okay, yeah, okay, fine. Sure, great, that's a good idea. And then when push comes to shove, they're like, you know what? We would do this, but we really need assurances that you won't increase anymore and you got to remove some more tariffs. And they're just like nipping at us, saying, you know what? We could get a little bit more out of them because we know they really want to get a deal done. It's pathetic.
It is.
And speaking about the next election, I don't know if you saw famed investor Leon Cooperman on CNBC.
No, I did not see this, but it sounds like a winner. So he was something I should have seen.
Yeah. So he was he was actually under investigation for some insider trading or something for some time. Very famous, you know, kind of a portly guy, a guy that you'd be like, hey, I'd like him as my grandfather. And been doing a great job over the years. Very smart fellow, made a lot of money, but he wrote a letter, an open letter to or about Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax plan, which obviously he in particular has some desire not to get that done, right?
Well, yeah.
So he writes this letter and all of a sudden it's big news. And he goes on and on about this and he's really upset about the political divide. And he started talking about his thoughts on the election. And then he just kind of broke down. He just listen to this.
At a record high. The economy is growing. I mentioned a moment ago, 5 million more people at work created in his presidency. We have a record high employment, record low unemployment amongst minorities. I've taken a tough path of opening up trade dialogue with China. I focused the discussion on illegal immigration. Okay, I reduced government red tape and promoted deregulation. I bolstered our defense, national defense. His deportment is not presidential, and we need a unifier in that.
What he's saying is he's going over the different things that Trump has done and all the benefits and all the great things, right? And then he starts in this whole thing about where his concern is now that President Trump is not a unifier. He wants somebody more presidential. That's where he's going now. And then he starts getting into why this is a problem and why this divisiveness and this concern is an issue.
That position, and because the country is being torn apart.
Is it right here?
So let him make his own decision. I am not in favor of all this impeachment inquiry. I want the American people to decide in November of 2020 what the future should be.
I think, I think it's kind of obvious people can not only see the emotion on your face, but hear it in your voice when you talk about this, Lee. Why?
I care.
Brother, get off the air.
I care. It's very upsetting. And he's all crinkled. He's all upset. He's all, you know, he's moving papers around, looking down. He's getting all watery and all red. And he's, you know, it's all he wants. He cares. How do you like that?
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
Guy's on something.
Or he should be on something. I mean, you know, it's amazing that you have a billionaire and a real wealthy individual who is really concerned about the country and all that. I get that. But and I understand also that he's really concerned about the divisiveness. And he went on to talk about how he doesn't like the name calling and he doesn't like the way that, you know, he said he compared the Reagan era to the Trump era, where Reagan was always played, well, who was it? Joe Piscopo was played him on SNL all the time, right?
I think so, yeah.
And then, you know, he didn't like how it was done. It was really getting a bad rap. And what he did was invite him to the White House for a beer. Whereas Trump says, you know what? No talent, no ratings. You guys suck.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, he kind of went on
different
this whole
time, thing. Different time, different guy.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Okay. All about the meat. We got to talk about this. McDonald's loses its special sauce. McDonald's said Sunday that it's fired chief executive Steve Easterbrook for violating company policy by having a consensual relationship with an employee. The company said in a release that the board determined Easterbrook demonstrated poor judgment by engaging in the relationship. The board voted on this dismissal on Friday, and he agreed, so he's fired. He's done. However, he gets to keep his $37 million in stock awards and a $675,000 severance package and 18 months of insurance benefits. I guess that was because it was consensual versus what's a non-consensual? That's rape, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's always going to be consensual.
It's always going to be consensual.
Unless he should be jailed. Right.
But they made that a big point.
Well, they might make it sound as if he kind of pressured her or something because he's an – but he's an executive chef. Was she working directly for him?
I don't know. But either way, there's
– I mean, I don't get – I think this is being exaggerated. People date in the workplace.
Yeah, they have some kind of a company policy.
Well, there's always a company policy.
But who knows what's going to come out of this because, you know, if you – well, first of all, he may be married. And having a relationship, you know, an affair.
Well, that should be in the notes here.
I mean, there was nothing we could find. They're really pressing the idea of this consensual relationship. You know, really pressing that whole thing versus.
I think he's going to be fine with $37 million in stocks. And he should also might as well just take the girlfriend with him if they, you know, unless he is married. But I'm sure his wife's not going to object to $37
million. Yeah. Especially if she gets half and then divorce.
Yeah, she'll be even happier.
You know, the thing is, there was also, there was something about, I think the head of HR or the head of something else or someone in the management team also resigned.
So, you know, the thing, it was the CEO or somebody. It's a big shot.
Yeah.
It was also McDonald's. But the thing about this is that this guy was the chief executive, this is the chief executive. Okay. I'm looking for the guy. I'd like to find if this guy had anything to do with the ruination of the McDonald's French fry.
Oh.
He should be fired.
McDonald's has been doing great under his lead. I think he was there since 2015.
Not the French fries.
Okay. The profitability. Stock went down like 4% on this.
Well, he's a guy that, yeah. Okay.
Popped up a little bit afterwards today. But that's the world we live in. You know, you can't look the wrong way at somebody. You know, we're going to have a bunch of companies that just have one employee in the future.
That's the way to go.
Yeah, that's the only way to go. This way you can't get in trouble ever.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Just
crazy.
Job everything out to contractors.
Right. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, that's it can way. Be done. There are Cisco is almost that way.
There's one guy just kind of pushing buttons. And then you got a guy in India, got a guy in Pakistan, got a guy in China.
It's the human version of microservices architecture, the way a lot of websites are designed with this in mind.
Yep. Saudi Arabia, guess what? Restarting is Aramco IPO.
Yes. Yep.
Most profitable company in the world. Valuation anywhere from about $1.5 to $2 trillion, which they wanted to get to $2 trillion. That was a big push. And they sent out all their feelers and everybody going and banging on the doors of all the brokers and the folks that are going to push this on the public. It's going to be on.
The public is going to have to take this stock. There's just too much. I mean, I'm sure a lot of pension funds and others can get some pieces of it, but this is too much.
Well, they're just going to float like 10% of the company.
That's it. I thought they were going to float the whole thing.
No, they float 10% of the company. They keep it so that there's a little liquidity issue.
So in other words, you got stock, but you have absolutely zero power.
Oh, no, of course not. Even if there's no way they would ever sell more than 50%, obviously. And what I don't understand about this deal is that Aramco is a state-owned company, and it has many kind of the whole network of subsidiaries. So why would I want to buy a company, 10% position? Well, you know, that's the whole position, but a position in a company that I have a minority interest in that's run by the government, run by the state, that can pretty much do whatever they want with it. And if there is any accounting fraud, who's going to be the overseer? And it's going to be trading on the Saudi exchange anyway. So, you know, if there is some kind of hanky-panky going on, there's no there's no regulatory board or oversight board or anybody that's going to be looking into the accounting practices. Because
well, then who's going to buy this stock?
Oh, there'll be plenty of people. Plenty of suckers.
You think it's a sucker stock?
They're just trying to liquefy a major
piece. Natural gas.
Yeah, no, they're trying to liquefy. They're trying to liquefy their oil because obviously oil prices are depressed compared to where they were, and pretty much their entire country lives on this. I mean, you got a $2 trillion company. I think it's $200 billion. I think it was like $200 billion in net profit a year.
Yeah, go straight into the government's coffers.
So now they're going to be able to just pick up another X amount of dollars, maybe pay a dividend on some of this, and then try to just jack the price up on this to make some money on the offering.
Maybe.
Eventually buy back shares and take it private again.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to be swinging around back to the future right now. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission last week, said that it is seeking feedback on whether disclosure rules were discouraging firms from issuing SEC-registered residential mortgage-backed securities as the Trump administration seeks to overhaul the housing market. And there's been 5 years of limited activity in this whole RMBS market, which is this residential mortgage-backed securities. In other words, what's happening here is, once again, it looks like we're going to be able to package up mortgages and sell them as securitized debt, which we know.
We know it doesn't work. Well, I mean, it works for some people who make a bunch of money on the packaging. But why would this happen?
Because when times are good, nobody has any concern about any of this. And they figure, well, we could go back.
It was just a problem one time.
One time, there was too much leverage in the system at that point, and the oversight was really too loose. We
couldn't trust the agencies that did the right rating system. So right. That was the problem.
They would do that again. And this time would be different. And we're only going to make incremental changes. We're not going to go back to where it was. I think that's the big issue here. Twitter is banning political advertising. Did we talk about this?
Yeah.
Oh, we did? Okay.
We decided they're idiots.
Right. And Facebook, though, said, in a follow-up, we're fine with political ads.
Why wouldn't they be? Yeah.
And there was another...
Just an ad.
There was another announcement.
This is like a newspaper. Let's say they were like doing stuff like this. So they're like going to go over all their ads. Instead of letting the salesman go sell ads and fill up the newspaper with ads, they're going to be picky about what... you can't take that. No, it's a political ad. We're not going to take that.
I don't know how they're going to stop it unless
what planet are they from?
Well, the political action groups are going to find a way around this somehow. They'll just get...
They'll find some ways. That's not a political ad.
Right. They'll get influencers somehow to do it through like three different sub-companies.
It's doable.
Facebook said they're fine with it. And tonight there was another announcement about another Facebook user information leak that in the Facebook groups, they allowed for the... I guess it was third-party partners to actually access information about comments in groups and who it was from and the comment and all that. This is back like for the last couple of years. They're just announcing it now.
Huh.
But of course, they sealed that up. But sure. It's amazing that they don't provide this information. You know, whatever. Let me see if I have. Yeah, I have this. Let me just skip down to this. The same kind of thing. We saw this announcement from Under Armour this week. The Wall Street Journal reported on November 3rd that Under Armour is the subject of a criminal and civil probe with an investigation of its revenue recognition accounting that began in July of 2017. Now, I don't know about you. I was under the impression there was required disclosure rules when there was a material concern or a material situation that is happening at a company, specifically a public company, that needs to be released and put out to the public.
That's what I always thought.
And this is going down back to 2017.
Yeah.
Under Armour acknowledged that it's cooperating with authorities, but it stands by its accounting practice, blah, 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 blah. Came out with some earnings as well. The stock down 18% on the news. Interestingly enough and coincidentally enough, just 2 weeks ago, the founder and CEO stepped down. Timing. Very interesting.
That's suspicious.
Yeah, no kidding. Apple. This story is a new story, but it seems like a recycled story. A former top Apple lawyer whose responsibilities included preventing insider trading has now been indicted for, insider trading. Gene Levoff, Apple's former corporate security secretary and director of corporate law, is accused of insider knowledge to trade Apple stock between February 2011 and April 2016. 5 years. And this is exactly what his position was entrusted to prevent. So,
what kind of insider training is he talking? What are we talking about? What is he doing? I mean, okay, well, I'm skeptical about it. I mean, unless he knew there were the kind of announcements that were coming out in advance, and he knew for a fact that it would sink the stock or make the stock go up. I mean, I don't know how you can even do that.
Well, if you know that Apple's going to come in with a blowout quarter, or an announcement of a particular product, or a failure of a product, or a really bad quarter, they're accusing him of an unfair advantage amounting to earnings of approximately $227,000 on some trades, while preventing losses of about $377,000 on others. So, I mean, if in fact you have a guy who has shares, does some trading here and there, but just days before an announcement where Apple's looks like they missed earnings or something's just not right, sells all of his shares, you got to wonder.
Yeah, well, you'd assume that was insider trading, but these seem to be piddling amounts for a guy at that level.
Well, if he did much more, he'd be...
Oh, I must have been. It's just on some trade. So he was doing a lot of trading, apparently.
Yeah, between 2011 and 2016.
So he may have made millions. Okay, well,
yep,
he screwed up.
Japanese factory activity shrank in the fastest pace in over 3 years in October, which is hurt by slumping new orders and output. And the economy is still slowing down, and global demand is a problem due to trade frictions. Manufacturing new orders declined to the fastest rate in almost 7 years as trade tensions and global economic weakness restricted exports. On the good news front, Tesla came out with a miraculous surprise earning number that just totally burned the shorts.
Yeah. So what happens?
Elon's tweet that day was just a emoji flame.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yep. So they delivered a strong third quarter. They did the same thing in the third quarter last year, I believe. They delivered a strong third quarter earnings report and posted a surprise profit. And they were ahead of a new factory in Shanghai. Share spiked 20% in the after hours. Goldman says that the bull market will keep rolling along until 2000 through 2020 on the back of three big buyers. This is what I found fascinating. Not that they said that the bull market's going to keep rolling on, but they said there's going to be three reasons, three buyers that are really going to be pushing markets up in a continuation through 2020. Corporations, foreign investors, and U.S. households. They believe that companies are going to be spending $470 billion on stocks next year, which is, of course, stock buybacks. Foreign investors in U.S. households contributing $50 billion for foreign, $30 billion for U.S. households. Just think about that for a second. Foreign and U.S. households, foreign investors in U.S. households are going to buy $80 billion worth of stocks. Corporations are going to buy back $470 billion. Seems a little, no wonder why the stock market's going up.
Yeah, I'd say.
Corporations are eating themselves. Here's one for you.
That's the one way of putting it.
Yeah. Here's something. This is for you. Walgreens Boots Alliance, one of your favorite stocks.
Yep.
Share spiked today, triggering circuit breakers, actually, when there was headlines that the company's in talks with buyout firms about a potential go private deal. Interesting.
I'm surprised those companies ever, you know, that's a very strange, those two companies are so different.
What, CVS you mean? To, CVS and Walgreens?
No, no, Boots and Walgreens.
Oh. Boots is not here, though, is it? It's only in Europe.
No, they're in England, but I mean, they, no, they're not here that I know of. There may be something like a store in New York or something, but it's such a, the whole thing is so different. There's like alien to each other, it seems to me. And I've always been surprised it does well.
I went to a couple of Boots stores in London when I was there recently, and they're just like no frills, basically just your needed medications.
But they have a lot of everything you need is in there.
Everything you need, but they don't have the sandwiches. They don't have the greeting.
No, they don't have any of that
greeting
crap.
Greeting cards, wrapping paper toys. Yeah, none of that stuff. Right, exactly. But and they pack it in those stores because they're a lot smaller than the ones here.
Well, there's some big Boots stores around.
We mentioned last week that we're saving money to get the AirPods. We don't have enough money for the couple pair of AirPods yet. So if you want to make a donation to the AirPod Challenge, where John and I are going to get these new fandangled AirPods from Apple to test them out and to kind of come back and give you a report, we probably should have done one AirPod and one of the Amazon ones. Well, we'll see how that goes. Anyway, you can go over and donate to the show for that reason or for whatever reason. And
nobody wants us to do this trick.
It seems not. I don't know why, but either way, if you donate and you put AirPod in there, once we get it, we'll mention your name on the show. And if not, you just want to donate, you could do whatever you want just to help us along with the various expenses and our time and energy and the cost of the stream and all that good stuff.
Even though yes,
stream is free for us from Adam. Oh, that will segue into No Agenda. Of course, you can listen to No Agenda every Thursday and Sunday. You really should because they just passed their 12-year anniversary. Happy 12-year anniversary of the show. And I know Adam's a diehard. He was over in, where was he? In Amsterdam?
Holland. Or? He's in Holland.
He's Holland. It was great.
He's going to be on a TV show.
Oh.
He's a big shot over there.
Yeah, he's going to be talking in the Deutsch.
He talks in fluent Dutch, and he's there's a big anniversary of Dutch television or Dutch radio or something like that. And he's going to be presenting something to someone or getting an award or just shooting the crap about something. I don't know.
It's amazing that he's been here for so long and not active there that he's still a big celeb.
Yeah. Unlike me in Brazil.
You in Brazil? What does that mean?
I was very famous in Brazil for a while.
Why?
Because I had a couple of columns down there. I was a hot shot in the tech writing world.
Oh, well, we should go down there and maybe they'll treat you like they do him, you know, with private cars and go into the private area of the airport and you have all the cameras around you and all that. We could stir that up.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't think so.
No. Okay. All right, moving along. Let's see what else I got here. This is a story that I saw, but it also came from a listener, and I call him John Fact Checker Steck, because every show that we do, he sends me an email about something wrong we said.
That could be.
So I was getting a lot of...
I know the Steckmeister.
Yeah, I was getting a lot of emails from him. And it was always this, what's with the squeaky chair for Dvorak or Dvorak? Why did you press him on this? You know? And I wrote back, I'm like, listen, dude, how about one, say something nice. Just one thing. So he said something nice to me. That was the last of that one. But he sends me little articles. This one was about Popeye's chicken. And they brought back the chicken sandwich this Sunday. After all that, you remember they ran out of chicken. There was a whole...
This whole thing is a publicity scam.
Yeah, now there was a fight that broke out, a cutting in line. Yeah,
if you dig into this fight that broke out, they try to make it sound as if it's a fight over a chicken sandwich. It was a fight over some guy who cut in line.
Yeah, that's what it was, which is just as silly.
And well, it is silly,
and
but...
And he killed somebody.
Yeah, guy got knifed.
Don't bring a knife to a chicken sandwich. That's the motto there. Google is buying Fitbit. That is confirmed.
Yeah.
I got a note from Fitbit like, hey, don't worry. we're not going to be sharing any data. All your data is secure. Nothing's going to change.
At least you got a note. You never got a note from any of those guys that made the Chinese clones.
Right. That's true. That is true. Let's see here. This is a thing all of a sudden. We're getting a lot of coverage, it seems, on this topic of this 4-day work week. I feel like this is something that's been recycled.
Because, totally.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I heard this when I was a kid.
Yeah, the 4-day work week. A recent study of the 4-day work week program found employees were 20% more productive.
Okay. Yeah, for a while.
And much happier.
Yeah, for a while.
Microsoft also tested the 4-day work week in August and said that productivity jumped 40%. I don't know if they're using
it. Sure, it did.
Yeah. And more from the study.
Because you go to work, you miss the day, so you got all this work to make up.
Yeah, I don't understand.
So you work,
thing.
You kill yourself to catch up, and then you went up a few percentage points because you had to do all this. You had to do 2 days work in 1 day.
3 in 4 full-time employees said that they could do their job in under just 7 hours each day if they could work uninterrupted. Well, first of all, some of the productivity problems and the leaks have been because we have these fakakta phones all the time beeping at us and screaming at us. Years ago, we didn't have this. You just worked. You didn't have an access to the outside except for your telephone.
Yeah, but you still would get distracted by fellow employees coming by and shooting the breeze.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you want some coffee? You want to take a walk? You want to go out for a smoke? Yep. Mm-hmm. That's the worst. Hey, how you doing? I'm working. Oh, yeah. What's going on? How's your weekend? So half of the employees that were surveyed think they could wrap up things in just 5 hours or less. So if all these employees could do things in 5 hours or less, why are they doing things in 8 hours? And doesn't that mean that they're just wasting time throughout the day?
What it really means is that all these studies are bogus.
Totally bogus. I don't know what the point is because I get the fact that if you can complete your work at a certain period of time, you're golden. Hey, great. But what's the end game here?
I don't know. I don't think no one's going to a 4-day work week. They can't. It's a scheduling nightmare. They can't even do flex time in most companies because it's a scheduling nightmare. They can't even do telecommuting in most companies because it's a scheduling nightmare. So they just make everyone work from 8 to 5 and, you know, take an hour for lunch. That's about it. Boom.
The whole thing is crazy. I don't get it. I don't understand. But who am I to understand this stuff?
This is DH Unplugged's brain teaser.
Who is this? Tom, are you listening? You get to come up with a better one of those. We need something. I like the music, but something with the more...
Is that our station ID call out or whatever you want to call it.
By the way, I laugh my butt off every time you go to station ID on No Agenda, and then you guys we're back. And we're back.
We're back.
Oh, it's the little things that get you, you know?
Where'd you really ever go? You're back.
Yeah, we're back. Last week's brain teaser. We'll go through this again. It was a bit harder. I think you gave it a B- for difficulty, but an F for intuitiveness. And the brain teaser went like this. It's a 5-letter word. If you take away the first letter, it is something that you get from the sun. If you remove the second letter, you will get something to eat. If you remove the third letter, you get a word you use in pointing. And if you remove the fourth letter, you get something to drink. What is it?
The 5-letter word is wheat.
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 W-H-E-A-T.
Wheat.
So I don't know if you got that, but we have one that is, you're going to decide whether it is from intuitive nature, if it's what the score is and the difficulty score. So here we go. You see a boat filled with people. It is not capsized, but when you look again, you don't see a single person on the boat. Why?
Boat filled with people. It has not capsized. But when you look again, you don't see a single person on the boat.
We will have the answer next week.
So I would give this one. This sounds like another good B. Now, it sounds like something you could actually deduce.
Yes, you could deduce this. I do agree with that.
Be sure to listen next week for the answer.
Yeah,
God.
I can't do
the
it.
The worst.
Oh, this is the high quality we got here, the high quality. All right, let me just make sure we covered everything here. I think we talked about that. We talked about Under Armour, Goldman tests around the world. Whoops, from Apple Lawyer. Okay. Well, why don't we, we're going to have to go, we're going to have to chante.
This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures.
I want to mention, by the way, just a quick plug here for a second, that the last several weeks on the Disciplined Investor podcast, which I put out on Sundays, had a lot of meat in there about investing and investment theory and what is going on in the markets, as well as psychology issues. So kind of hit that up. This week coming up is going to be guest Frank Curzio, and he promises to bring a couple of small cap and large cap names that he likes and a discussion of that. And we're going to have our usual trade war battle. And then in 2 weeks, we have Meb Faber coming on board. So make sure to tune into that. Thank you.
Always the winner.
Yeah.
And I think the words you wanted earlier was sachet.
What did I say? Satchel?
Shantay, I think.
Yeah, shantay. Sachet. You're right. Thank you for correcting me. This way John Steck doesn't have to write me.
Yeah, it saved you another note. You don't shantay around.
Yeah, no worries. What's the matter with you shantaying? Couple of things to note here. I want to mention something. Your Kraft Heinz was kicked off, but I will tell you that if you did not get kicked off, you would be up 16%.
Good.
Yeah. So that was a good one. That's coming back a bit. Kinder Morgan's still on there. Summit State's still on there. Advanced Drain is still on there, up 13.5%. Collier's International Group, up, 5.8. SL Green Realty about, I gotta see if that was kicked off. I don't think it was kicked off. It's right there. Your Navios Marine Containers is up 2.5%. That was your triangle descending with a 15% stop. And my Facebook, which, I got a note from the same guy again going, oh, well, the day after the earnings came out, they beat earnings nicely. What's really interesting about Facebook is, and I don't need to keep on pressing a loser here, but it's only down 2%, 2.5% from where we had an entry here. Can't get above this 195 number for some reason. It did in the overnight when the earnings came out, get up to like 198, but then it kind of started coming down a bit.
Probably today, frozen there for a while.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see this kind of pick up a little bit here. So I have one pick for this week. That is another potential wild one, and that's going to be Roku.
And you're going to short it.
I'm going to short Roku into earnings. Roku was recently about 100 and... You know what? I don't remember what the top was there. I got to look at this. I got to find this. Hold on a second. Roku stock. Let's see. That 6 months ago. The top was, about 170. It recently came down as low as about 100. And then it bounced up again to about 150. Now it's starting to roll over a little bit into earnings. There's a lot of set-top box and other providers, a lot of competition in the markets right now. Facebook announced something again for a set-top box tonight. And it seems to me that if you have a lot of these services coming out that are going to competing with each other and they want to lower prices, they may actually look to cut some of their costs and their revenue sharing with these companies, like a Roku.
Maybe.
So we have their earnings coming out. I don't know why the stock dipped down to 100, actually sub 100. Back in September, but the 52-week high was 176. 52-week low was 26. So it's traded between 26 and 176 this year.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to go short that. So there you go. What do you have?
I want to go long on Schnitzer Steel.
Oh, is that S-H-S-C-H-N?
I think maybe. I have to look.
I think that's what it is.
I can't find it.
Yep, that's it. S-C-H-N.
And this is just strictly, you know, I'm looking for some insider stuff going on. There's nothing really appealing to me at all.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I'm looking for some triangles one way or the other. I didn't think much. But in the process, I looked at Schnitzer Steel's chart. And I just like the way it's making this steady move. I think it's good for a number of points up.
All right, let's put that on here.
It's in a very second like channel.
The Schnitzer Steel, you say that a few times, the Schnitzer Steel.
Schnitzer Steel channel. Although, and by the way, there is somebody that's selling it. An insider is dumping some, but I don't care. When they sell, as anyone knows, when an insider sells, it's just maybe taking money off the table.
Yeah. Selling is not by insiders is not necessarily a sign of anything. Buying is much
seldom,
more.
Seldom a sign of anything.
Yeah.
But buying is mostly a sign of something.
Yep. Well, let's see what happens here. Let's see. I got that all listed. You can see everything over on the DH Unplugged website, by the way. So make sure to go over there. And I think we're going to wrap it up for this week.
All right. Well, then it's next week for us.
All right. Yay, us.
All right.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.